defense was playing unreal up back there. Castro's huge two-run homer really set the tone there. So just a great team win. Hedges and I had a really good game plan going in, and then we followed it. And just executing pitches and letting the defense work really was the key.
Yeah, the Pirates needed that guy in that spot in the worst way. Mitch Keller, AT&T Sportsnet, last night after his team's 2-0 win on Monday to beat the Colorado Rockies. They get the victory and end a 7-game losing streak. They still lead the NL Central by half a game over the Milwaukee Brewers. Mitch Keller, a complete game shutout. I'm Tim Benz. This is the Pittsburgh CityCast. We're brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download the app today or go to betrivers.com. The Pirates are still in a funk, though, hitting-wise, a team-wide hitting slump despite the victory. 8 straight games now, 2 runs or less for the Buccos. The franchise record is 9. Pirates are -167 to win tonight. They're +120 on the run line. Colorado +143 straight, -148 to cover on the run line. Tonight, it's Luis Ortiz against Connor Siebold. Ortiz is getting his first start for the Bucks. Siebold is getting his second for Colorado. His ERA is 5.30. Maybe this is the game the Pirates exceed 2 runs. What do you think? That has to go the other way soon, doesn't it? The Pirates team total is 4.5. I'll go in that direction tonight. I'll go over on the Buccos team total at -121, above 4.5. They're just due to break that drought, I think. And right about now sounds like the time that should happen in terms of the pitching matchup and in terms of, well, just hitting vigorous. Like I said, they're on the cusp of a franchise record, for crying out loud. And they're playing the Rockies, who, granted, had a hot streak, 6 of 7, but they struggle against the Pirates. And Pittsburgh's had their number this season, going 4-0 thus far. Another bet I kind of like baseball-wise, Orioles under 3.5 runs for their team total. Zach Eflin is pitching for Tampa. His ERA is 2.25. The under is only -104 for Baltimore. Eflin had 7 shutout innings last time versus the Pirates. Baltimore has been scuffling at the plate a bit. 0, 2, and 4 runs their last 3 games. So I'll go under there. Under 3.5 runs at -104. Or just go with the Rays straight at -122 with Grayson Rodriguez and his 5.46 ERA in the mound. I kind of like the Rays straight in this one, too. Checking the Steelers, a lot of praise for them nationally for their draft and for their offseason that they've had. It's not translating on the odds boards, though. Back on March the 21st, I checked this out during one of our podcasts that we did here at the Bet Rivers Network on the Pittsburgh CityCast. On March the 21st, the Steelers were +3,000 to win the AFC and +600 to win the AFC North. Today at Bet Rivers, they're still +600 to win the AFC North and +2,500 to win the AFC. So barely, just a little movement in the Steelers' favor in the conference, but still in fourth place in the division. I don't see the Steelers being anything worse than the third place team. I don't think the Browns catch them. And if they do, it's because they're the second place team and Lamar is hurt and the Ravens are the fourth place team and the Steelers are third. I think that's the worst case scenario. By the way, to win a Super Bowl, it's +5,000. Those odds have narrowed slightly from +6,000 back on March the 21st. And I get the skepticism. For as many places as the Steelers have improved on their roster, there have been a lot of them, I still see places for them to patch over some holes. Like, for instance, here's what I'm talking about. On Friday, CBS Sports handed out grades for how every team in the NFL handled its offseason. The Steelers were one of 8 teams that got an A, and this was the assessment of writer Cody Benjamin at CBS Sports. Quote, they probably could have matched what the Lions gave Cam Sutton to keep an ascending starter at corner, but Patrick Peterson is a plug-and-play consolation prize after a Vikings renaissance. He should thrive alongside Minkah Fitzpatrick. Ex-Eagles guard Isaac Seumalo is maybe the smartest bet, bringing a quiet, sterling piece of Philly's vaunted O-line to Kenny Pickett's defense. They also netted some good values in the draft with Broderick Jones, Joey Porter Jr., Darnell Washington, who should pair with ex-Rams wide receiver Allen Robinson to give them quite a red zone team, end quote. Now, while I was a big fan of the Steelers draft, and we talked about that last week, overall for the offseason, I wouldn't go as high as an A. I might go B, probably a B+. I'll give high marks for the draft for how the front office bolstered the offensive and defensive lines. I agree with Benjamin's assessment about improving red zone options on offense. I'll also say that the Steelers did a nice job of bolstering the offensive and defensive lines in free agency too. I also like how Omar Khan adequately covered free agent departures in the secondary with Sutton and Edmonds leaving, and the additions and retentions of players who may prove to be just as good or better in Peterson and DeMonte Casey and Joey Porter Jr. and Keanu Neal. But merely adding Nick Herbig and Quincy Roche to the outside linebacker room still makes me nervous about the depth of that position. And while Khan signed a Landon Roberts and Cole Holcomb at the inside backer position, I still maintain that better players were affordable in free agency, and they bypassed on those guys to go even cheaper with Roberts and Holcomb, and I didn't understand or like that strategy. So I'm not quite as effusive as the national guys, but I also think the odds that we talked about earlier are a little steep against the Steelers. Not enough to sucker me in a bet, but a little steep nonetheless. All right, hockey. Playoff action continues tonight. Devils, Hurricanes, Game 4. Hurricanes up 2-1. It was 8-4 Jersey in Game 3. I bet that game comes way down tonight. I bet both teams are intentionally buttoned up after that gong show. Give me the under in that one at 5.5, minus 110. The over is going off at minus 107. The Devils are at minus 155 to win. Hurricanes at plus 132. I'm not wild about either line, so I'll just go with the plus money and Carolina if given choice, but I do like the under total. In the West, it's Seattle and Dallas. You know, my gut says Dallas is going to even this up, but at plus 114 at home and playing better hockey, I'm probably going to go with Seattle to make this a 3-1 series lead and leave it to Dallas to have to scramble back. I don't rule that out. I think Dallas can do that, but them getting plus money at home to go up 3-1 playing the way that they are, if I do play that one, I might go Seattle, and I like the over 5.5 at minus 112. Okay, let's get more insight on hockey in the playoffs with Brian Metzer of the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. We'll get into some of the lines with him. We'll talk about some defections from the Pittsburgh Penguins to leagues in Europe. And we'll also talk about the 30th anniversary of the Islanders series of 1993 that ruined the great season of the 93 Penguins, the David Volek game on Sunday, May 14th. That'll be the 30th anniversary of that horrific event for Pittsburgh sports fans to remember. We'll talk about that with Mets as well. So far, Brian, second round action. What have you thought from what you've seen in the NHL, specifically as it relates to the quality of play versus the depth of goonery that we saw in round one?
Well, great to be back with you again here, Tim. I think that the officiating is still left a little, in the way of where you want it to be. They're not taking care of business perfectly, but it's still not as bad as it was in round one. And beyond that, I think that it's been kind of fun to watch the weeping and gnashing of teeth across the boards here, because you have Seattle, you know, doing well in their series against Dallas, which is a little bit of a shocker based on what you and I talked about last week. And the biggest shocker, which maybe isn't as shocking because I was impressed by Florida enough with the way they've been playing, is their 3-0 lead over the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, that right there is causing a lot of consternation around the hockey world. Kyle Dubas is probably still throwing water bottles and fighting with fans and doing all those kinds of things. And he's kind of looked, I don't know, like an insolent child at times, which I got a text from somebody saying, could you picture, and they just use these names because that's what they were used to in Pittsburgh, Craig Patrick or Ray Shiro doing that. And no, I couldn't. But I guess
I could picture Brian Burke doing it. I know Brian Burke did it a lot.
Well, he wouldn't throw a water bottle so much as a haymaker, Tim. You know, he seems like the type that would throw a punch at somebody sitting next to him. But you're right, and it was funny that they didn't use him as an example. But overall, I would say it's been a fun second round. And just when you think teams are dead, they find a way to rise up, as the Devils did in their game three. And now Vegas kind of took advantage last night and just took care of their business to go up 2-1 in that series. So it's been an entertaining second round.
The Florida-Toronto thing to me is really odd in the sense that you know, I thought that the mental angle for both teams played in Toronto's favor. Like, I thought getting over the first round hump would serve them well, and maybe they play even more free and easy. And then I thought that Toronto, after slaying the Dragon with the Boston Bruins, would have an inevitable letdown, and it's been completely opposite in both regards.
Yeah, I think it's very intriguing, because the whole world acted like, okay, Toronto's going to win the cup now, because they finally got out of the first round, and they almost look tight. They look like they don't know how to handle any adversity in the hockey games that they're playing. Florida still looks pretty loose and relaxed, and they're just kind of doing their thing and playing tight hockey games, getting great goaltending, being physical. You see all the Leafs fans losing their minds about Matthew Tkachuk and the way he's been physical with their, you know, their players, and he should be thrown out of games. And sometimes in the playoffs, that's what happens. I mean, you got these mystique situations rising to the surface. And right now, the Florida Panthers have a feel of somebody that, with the goaltending they're getting, I mean, it's kind of a redemption story for them and Sergei Bobrovsky. This guy is outstanding right now. He's living up to his contract at the moment anyway. And for the entire season, essentially, they tried to take his job away. You had Spencer Knight. You had, you know, the kid, Alex Lyon, coming in and kind of getting them into the playoffs. They've had other guys try and tend some goal for them over the past couple seasons, where you thought Bob would be out there on the scrap heap this offseason. And now he looks like a $10 million man, which is what he should have been all along for them. So it's been a lot of fun to watch them kind of rain on the parade in Toronto. And it speaks back to what we did a week or so ago, Tim, talking about Toronto and maybe getting a little bit too excited about winning in the first round and not realizing what actually goes into going on a long playoff run. They're still a pretty green team in that way. I know they brought in an awful lot of pieces, but all their stars have never really been in this situation, and I think we're seeing that kind of show itself a little bit.
The Panthers are plus 102 to win, so they're underdogs in Game 4, even though it's at home, even though it's a 3-0 series lead in their advantage. Toronto favored to win at minus 118, checking the BetRivers lines. Do the Leafs have one last gasp? Do they win one for pride here, or do the Panthers put them away?
I will say this, Tim. We've seen probably in this day and age teams overcome 3-1 and maybe even 3-0, but especially the 3-1 lead in series is never safe anymore. It just seems like teams have been able to equalize that a lot more often than they used to in the past. But that said, even if they get it to 3-1, which I would not be shocked. I mean, this is the Toronto Maple Leafs. They have a lot of talent. They have a very good hockey team. It would not be shocking to see them find a way to win a game and force a game 5 here. However, just based on what we've seen, Florida is like the nasty, like, rash that won't go away. I wouldn't be surprised to see them wrap it up on their home ice. And then can you just imagine the fires that are going to start north of the border if Toronto goes out in 4 against the Florida Panthers, the second wild card? I want that to happen simply for the storylines and to watch where all the dust settles on that. But I think Toronto finds a way to go out and win game four, to force a game 5. So go ahead and maybe put a couple bucks on that and feel confident in doing so. But I'm not going to be surprised if Florida's sitting there licking their paws, taking a little cat bath in the corner, happily waiting for round 3 by the end of that game.
Speaking of fires in Canada, how about out west if Edmonton goes down 3-1 against the Vegas Golden Knights tomorrow? Because right now Vegas is up 2-1 in that best of 7. Edmonton is nearly a 2-1 favorite to win game 4. They're minus 195. I'm leaning in that direction. This one smells like a 7-gamer to me. What do you think?
It does smell like a 7-gamer. I was surprised to see the way Edmonton melted down last night and started taking penalties. Evander Kane has got to be reeled in, because you just can't be undisciplined the way that he was. He is such a valuable and good player for them. You can't have him kind of undermining the artistry of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, because they've been putting on an outstanding playoff. And I still feel like Leon's not getting enough credit for what he's done in these playoffs. So all of that said, Tim, I think it does speak to a 7-gamer. However, you've got some interesting storylines bubbling there. You know, you had Laurent Brossoit have to leave the game with an injury. Aiden Hill comes in. He played more games than a typical guy named Aiden Hill would have this season. He's not a household name, but he was in there quite a bit for the Knights this season. And he looked pretty darn good in doing what he needed to do in the hockey game to find a way to help them, you know, finish it off. So I don't know if now you stick with him. Is it the time for Jonathan Quick to kind of get involved? I don't know, you know, why they even really went out and got him. He's not really been involved at all in the playoffs. I don't believe he's hurt. I could be wrong about that, but he has all that pedigree. And then Jack Eichel very quietly has seemingly wanted to kind of make this his little Stanley Cup final going up against Connor McDavid. He'll never be thought of in the same breath as him, but I think that's still an interesting dynamic. So while it does reek of seven games, I think that's where it'll be headed, six or seven. It's going to be really interesting if Vegas wins the next one to make it 3-1, because Canada was pointing all their spotlights on those two teams and saying, ha-ha, first time since 93, we got two teams going in the second round, and they're very dominant teams. They thought for sure this is when the drought would end, and now all of a sudden there's some cracks in the foundation of that whole sentiment, so maybe it won't happen for them.
Meanwhile, again, Brian Metzger, our guest, back to the point you made about teams coming back from 3-1 deficits. I think the Stars could do that if they have to, should they lose tonight against Seattle. I kind of think they are going to have to, though, Brian, because I was surprised to see with the way Seattle's playing. They're at home. They're up 2-1. Dallas has had trouble. Ottinger's had problems. And the Kraken are still plus 114 underdogs. If you're going to give me plus money, at least in this game four with the way Seattle's playing, I'll take the Kraken tonight. I'm not ruling out the Stars for the series, but I think they're going to have to win three in a row to close it out.
I'm with you, Tim. The Kraken just seemingly have something going on. They're just so deep. They have scoring up and down their lineup. They showed it the other night by putting up all the goals that they did. And for me, I mean, as long as they get the goaltending, I think they have a pretty darn good hockey team, and one that could kind of take the hockey world by storm and probably get by the Stars. But I'm with you. I think they win this next one to put them in a pretty precarious situation, down three games to one, and then force the Stars to not only get scoring, but to get Jake Ottinger righted, because he's not looked like himself in this series. But that said, he's been under some siege in terms of line after line after line of that team, just putting out offensive players that can find ways to score some goals. So I think they have their work cut out for them, and I'm with you, Tim. Seattle looks like a team that will make it a 3-1 game in the next game here.
We kind of work backwards here, but let's go to the first game tonight to close out our look at the current series. New Jersey is a minus 155 favorite to tie up the series at 2-2. I think I'm leaning in that direction, but what I like more than anything, Brian, is the under 5.5 at minus 110. And the reason I say that is because if you look at 8-4, what a fluke that was last time out. I think these teams are going to overcompensate defensively, don't you?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Do you think the Jack Hughes and Luke Hughes and company aren't going to find a way to score 8 again and single-handedly put it over? I think they have no choice but to make it more of a boring hockey game, Tim, because you can't open it up like that and allow the offensive powers of the New Jersey Devils to shine the way that they did. And specifically Jack Hughes, I mean, I know I mentioned it about the first round. We all knew the kind of player he was, the first overall pick, and I believe it was 19. He's such a talented kid, and he's really kind of putting himself on the map in terms of jumping into the conversation with the league's biggest superstars in these playoffs, and he showed it in the last game with his four-point effort. So I think that they're going to focus on shutting him down, shutting the Devils down offensively, and forcing them to play maybe early 2000 style Devils hockey, because we know the Hurricanes are very capable of doing that. So I would say it has the feeling of a 3-2 type game. So depending on what number you are able to lock in, I think the under would probably be a safe bet going into that night.
Brian Metzger, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. Mets, what are you hearing on the Pens front in the offseason? Anything of note in terms of either A, the GM, B, the goalie, or see anything regarding some free agency moves? What have you thought of some of the little moves along the way that have happened? Some of the defections, like Hollander back to Sweden. One of the goalies, didn't they just go back to
Lindbergh left.
Lindbergh went back to Finland. Nylander got tied up again, though, right, for a contract extension?
Yeah, they did. They locked up Alex Nylander, and that tells me that they're looking at him to be potentially an NHL player next season, because I fully believed him, if they weren't, you know, kind of in the cap crunch that they were, I think Nylander would have been on the roster a lot more often than he was this season. He's proven to be a decent offensive player. I know he didn't flash it as much in the NHL, but he has a good two-way game, and that was the knock on him when he was a high first-round pick for the Sabres, and they brought him in, and he didn't end up really panning out after getting a good bit of time in the NHL. It was because of the defensive side of his game, and they seemingly have fixed that a little bit. He's focused on it and worked on it quite a bit. And I know he had some moments that left you shaking your head defensively last year, but they were far and few between. So I think he's an NHL player for them next season. It's a bit surprising to me that you're seeing these prospects from the team leave, though. I mean, this is a
surprising a group or that, disappointing.
Probably a little bit both.
I'm not surprised. I'm disappointed, but I'm not surprised based on the lack with which the youth within the system has been given any confidence or indication that there's a future in front of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great point, Tim. And I was particularly dismayed to see Lindbergh go. I mean, this is the year that maybe if he could right himself, I know he's had some injuries over the last couple seasons, but coming out of college, I mean, you know, from the work you do with the NCAA, this was a really talented goaltender that went into the Minnesota Wild organization, became available as a free agent from there because they kind of had a boatload of goalies in the system for a while, and the Penguins were able to snag him. I was really excited when they brought him in, and I thought, okay, this could be a guy you let him marinate for a little while in your minor league system, and then you get him on board here. And this could have been the season with some question marks in goal that maybe he could come up and be an NHL backup. And here he goes. He goes back to the Scandinavian nations. So it was disappointing in that regard for sure. But then you see Hallander, this could have been the year he could have gotten himself a job. But to your point, would Mike Sullivan have given him the opportunity? Maybe not. And so you don't blame them for leaving, but it sucks because I just picked up, I love this issue of the magazine when it comes out each year. The Hockey News does the Future Watch, and it kind of ranks every team's prospects, and it goes team by team. Of the Penguins' top prospects, first of all, it leaves you very underwhelmed when you look at the list. The only one they have in the top 100 in the National Hockey League is Owen Pickering, who they took at number 21 back in 2022. And beyond that, the only other two names that were involved were Philip Hallander and Philip Lindbergh. Both of those guys are gone, and they were in the top 10 in the organization. They weren't in the top 100 in the league, but they were still looked at as top prospects here. So they're gone. And beyond that, now you have 10 names that most Penguins fans probably have heard of just based on the signings when they happened or the draft picks, but there's nothing to really get super excited about. That was the only name that the Hockey News recognized as really, really worth it was Owen Pickering. Sam Poulin is still a prospect. He's on the list, but with the issues he's had over the last year where he had to leave, I think he had some depression issues, not to talk too deeply about that. He was having a tough time. And I think some of that involved what we just talked about, not getting an NHL chance. He got, it was on that revolving door of coming up and going down. So their cupboard's looking pretty barren right now. And that's, I think, why, as much as anything else, people are saying, well, you didn't win the draft lottery. You're sticking at 14. Maybe you need to use your 14th overall pick to go ahead and bolster the NHL club with a trade, because you're not going to really get a player that's going to impact your depth. I mean, there's a chance of it, but not quite as much as if you were picking in the top five, which is what they were hoping if they could have won the lottery. And so go out, bolster the NHL, continue to try and win with Sid, Gino, and Letang, and then let the pieces fall where they may over the next couple of years, because they're in a pretty dire spot in terms of prospects and young players, especially after those last two guys that we were just talking about went back home.
So if Connor Bedard works out as well for the Blackhawks as Sidney Crosby did with the Penguins, can we complain about the draft system being rigged now? Are we allowed to do that in Pittsburgh for a change? Is that how this works?
The fix was in, Tim. They made sure the Penguins stayed at 14. They said, nope, you're not going to get number four. We can't have that. We don't want you getting a top five pick. But I think, it's funny because the teams that were in the conversation to win Bedard, you and I talked about it offline and I think on the show here. It's unfortunate, but it doesn't seem like the sexiest fits to have Bedard land in Columbus, to land in Arizona, to land in, just something like that. Well, here you go. He goes to a big market, an original six team who was just in the midst of a rebuild. It's a perfect acquisition at the perfect time for them as they try and rebrand themselves coming out of their controversies in recent years. And to now say, well, we lost Patrick Kane and probably Jonathan Toews. But hey, here is your savior. The stone rolled back and Connor Bedard walked out of the tomb and we're ready for action. So I think it's going to be intriguing to watch the backlash, if any. Most backlash I saw last night, Tim, didn't involve the draft being fixed so much as saying, boy, that's a shame because the Blackhawks didn't deserve it based on their transgressions in recent years.
Well, I mean, like, that is just, it's just a silly connection to make for the sake of pandering to Twitter to get likes and retweets about how much you care and how conscious you are. I mean, like, what they did is not to be excused, but I also don't see the connection at all to Connor Bedard and the draft lottery. I mean, like, what was to be done? Like, punish them with the amount of ping pong balls they got? I mean, that's just ridiculous.
No, I agree, Tim. And they, I mean, all the people who were players in that situation are gone. It took too long for them to maybe get to that point, but they did. The people who were there now weren't, you know, the GM, I mean, he's a young guy. He's trying to do his job. You got a new set of management type people and handling everything. I mean, you kind of got to move into the future. So for me, bitch and moan all you want about an original six team getting him over some newer type clubs. Sure, do that because that's what hockey fans do. But I didn't like that connection last night and saying, well, boy, the hockey gods failed everybody now. I mean, it was a despicable whole situation from top to bottom. But I don't hold the today Chicago Blackhawks management accountable for what they did before, but that's the kind of society we live in.
Mets on Sunday. It is the 30th anniversary of the David Volek goal. Do you remember where you were? What were you doing?
I remember it well, Tim. I was working at Independence Court in Oakland because I went to Central Catholic, as you know, and there was an assisted living facility right next door. We worked on the wait staff serving people food and did that after school. Got home, was watching it with my then girlfriend, and we were kind of up and down and all over the place emotionally watching that series and that game in particular, and just found myself, you know, celebrating a late goal to send it to overtime and then stunned whenever they lost the goal. And I think that's the moment that Penguins fans officially said, go home, Tom Barrasso, even though he was here
seven years longer. Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't go until 2000, right?
Well, he was injured, but here when I was here in 01, I think he was injured and under contract still by the time I got here, which was like February after Mario came back.
Because what I was thinking is he got traded for Ron Tugnutt and Yanni Laukkanen in the year that Tugnutt lost the goal with Primo
right
scoring.
You might
be
right.
So I think it was in 2000. It was the year right before he got back, Tim. He left. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess his legacy just held over the coverage then.
Yes.
We've got to talk to a goaltender. I wonder what this is going to be like. Is this guy like Barrasso too? And then the Moose came along and made everything all better.
Yes, the Moose, enlightened us all. And you know what was funny is,
Tugnutt was a good guy too. I should say that actually. I did cover him professionally when he was in Columbus.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I forgot he went there in the expansion draft, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, exactly.
Well, the funny thing, Tim, is when you look at the Moose Hedberg deal, I think the whole hockey world, including Pittsburgh Penguins fans, thought that the Penguins got a throw-in goaltender in a deal to acquire big Jeff Norton, the defenseman. And the next thing you know, Norton was pretty much a non-factor, and Moose Hedberg became essentially a starting goaltender and a Cinderella story that took them almost to the Stanley Cup final that year. It was kind of a remarkable run. It was a lot of fun until John Madden started using hidden nicknames of Mario Lemieux. Ace, and broke the hearts of Pittsburgh once again.
Yeah, so my thanks to Brian Metzer. You can check out that podcast at the Breakfast with Benz podcast every week over at Trib Live. Speaking of Breakfast with Benz at Trib Live, you can get a full retrospective of the 93 series. We're going to do that this weekend, including a conversation with Kevin Stevens that I think is going to be very special for people to hear as he flashes back to what happened in that Game 7. As well, Glenn Healy, Islanders goaltender, from a New York perspective. We'll talk to him, too, at Breakfast with Benz. Next week, we're back with you here at the Pittsburgh CityCast. On a Tuesday of next week, we'll get more into the hockey playoffs, play more on the Pirates as well, and have some rookie minicamp reaction from over on the South Side, too. This is the Bet Rivers Podcast Network, and this is the Pittsburgh CityCast, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Bet now from anywhere. Download the app today or go online to BetRivers.com.
Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh CityCast on the Bet Rivers Network.